and welcome to Let's Talk Iran, providing Iranian-American perspectives on current events and policies that shape U.S.-Iran relations and affect the Iranian-American community. This program is brought to you by the National Iranian-American Council, otherwise known as NIAC. I'm Nobar Elmi, and I'll be your host. I'm here today with Rabbi Mark Gopin. Rabbi Gopin is the director of George Mason University's Center on Religion, Diplomacy, and Conflict Resolution. He is an accomplished author, professor, researcher, and consultant, and he focuses on the role of religion and culture in not only sparking conflict, but as a critical component to reaching lasting resolutions between peoples and nations. Thank you, Rabbi Gopin, for being with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, talk of war is at an all-time high, and there are several combinations of this possible impending conflict. You have, you know, U.S. and Iran, Israel and Iran, and then all three, U.S., Israel, and Iran. Lobbying and special interest groups are making their arguments and pushing their agendas. But what is often forgotten or ignored are the two communities who are at the center of many of these debates, which are the Iranian-American and Jewish-American communities. Recently, there's been some media attention that has been placed on the people of Iran and Israel thanks to this ingenious Facebook campaign started by an Israeli couple. I'm sure you've seen it.
Yes.
It's the Israel Loves Iran campaign, where the message is clear, you know, that politicians and pundits don't represent the people and their desire to avoid war. So they really did a wonderful job of humanizing, you know, the concepts and policies. And that's something that you have a lot of experience doing, especially as it pertains to conflict resolution. So while this Facebook campaign targets Israelis and Iranians, what are the general sentiments within the Iranian-American and Jewish-American communities about the current tensions?
The general sentiments are mixed across the political spectrum. This is not a community. From the Jewish community's perspective, the Iranian community is unknown to them. It's a faceless community for them. It is strictly focused on the danger of nuclear holocaust. There's very little notion of personal antipathy with the community, and at the same time, because of that, it's a community that can it's that state of not being known is a great danger.
In looking at our past, how can our two communities learn from one another? And, you know, how can this historical perspective help us going forward?
I think the most important thing is to continue the humanization process and make it at a deeper level. There should be many people-to-people contacts among different kinds of professional groups. All of it should be televised and made into audiovisual accessibility. There should be exposure of the history of the relationship between the two communities going all the way back to Cyrus 2,500 years ago. All of these things will help humanize the two communities to each other in a way that will make it harder for a war to happen. Wars always happen when there is not enough cognitive dissonance in two communities about the reality of war. The more that these two communities know each other and come to know each other, the harder it will be for the war to take place.
So what sort of action can the Iranian-American and Jewish-American communities take domestically to help dispel the fears on both sides? I know you said there's that fear of the nuclear holocaust and the fear of the unknown. So what can they do to change that?
Well, I think that when it comes to the fear of nuclear holocaust, these are issues of authority of governments and the power of governments to influence public opinion, particularly when it comes to security matters, are quite overwhelming. It would be difficult to disbelieve heads of state when they say that there is a danger. That's a perpetual problem with every country in the world, including Iran and Israel. One thing we have to rely on are the common instincts that people have today, that war usually creates great casualties on both sides, and that they they need to work at building a relationship with each other to know that this is not the will of the people to move forward with great casualties. I think it's also the case that the more private conversations there are between Iranians and Iranian Americans and others who have a good inside knowledge of the community in Iran, that the more possible it will be for Jewish Americans to appreciate that there's more than one possibility of how to decrease the danger and increase the possibilities of a change in the relationship or a de-escalation of the negative relationship between Israel and Iran.
You have a wealth of experience and knowledge when it comes to, you know, again, humanizing and using communication as a tool to overcome conflict. Can you give us some examples of when you've been able to, you know, what was a particular good tactic you used when approaching somebody who might have been hostile, you know, at first, but then after talking to you or learned a little bit more about similarities and commonalities and you know, what that led to?
Well, I think that there are many different ways in which this happens. I think that when people make very profound gestures to each other, I think that those gestures have an impact that go beyond just the rational. So you often want to figure out what would be very meaningful to another group of people. And you also can't confuse so easily, and many organizations do this, the difference between organized organizations that officially represent the interests of states and so on, or political interests that are inflexible, and focus more on the people-to-people possibilities of these kind of gestures. And those gestures need to be done in consultation with people inside both communities to see what gestures would be meaningful and which would be accepted. For example, visits to different religious communities and religious ceremonies. The other possibility is the skills of listening, where you get used to listening to things that are very offensive to you, and really probing with more questions in order for people to build trust based on that give and take. And also, when that happens in a televised way, again, not a political debate, but much more of a process of inquiry, I think that can help as well. The other issue is that the communities are very diverse. The Iranian community is very diverse, and the Jewish community is very diverse. It can't be a process of just having one subsection of each community talk to each other, like secular elites. It has to be across the spectrum, and each kind of conversation paying attention to those different kinds of constituencies.
And do you think ultimately, you know, if the two communities, Iranian American and Jewish American communities, are to do more of this education and kind of demystifying one another, that a real effect can take place? Or do you think an effect, I mean, at the political level, or do you think that, you know, Congress and the administration have really dominated that? I mean, how can we make headway into helping to shape policies together as two communities, as opposed to letting the politicians speak for us?
I think that there has to be the creation of a constituency that can speak together, Jewish and Iranian, that will be able to say things of significance in a public way that catches the attention of policymakers, because many policymakers are divided on all of these issues. And we know for a fact how uncomfortable large swaths of the security community are with an attack on Iran. We know that there are divisions in Israel. We know there are divisions in the United States. And in the Jewish community, there are divisions as well. The key is to create a public face to an alternative. And it can't be just no war. It has to be an alternative. It has to be an alternative set of strategies that go public. A, the gestures. B, that capacity for listening to hear all the fears and doubts on both sides and come back with some good answers and some good responses and see a public face to some set of alternatives. Because people, and we've seen this with other wars, when there is no alternatives, then the military options always seem like the only available options. And so so we have to put our heads together on those Jews and Iranians who can really speak with one voice and come to agree on what they will say and what they won't say. And for that vision to not only be against war, but to be for something else, something concrete, some set of alternatives. Years ago, I was part of a U.S. Muslim engagement project that set out a policy of a set of alternatives to a war between the Islamic world and the United States or the West. And it's been a very rocky road since 9/11. But those concrete engagement strategies and suggestions were ultimately listened to at the highest level, A, because the people had influence, but most importantly, because they had a concrete alternative. And so concrete alternatives are a key here.
Great. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, but thank you again for speaking with us.
You're quite welcome. It's a pleasure.
And for more information on Rabbi Gopin, you can visit his website at www.marcgopin.com. And as always, please be sure to visit NIAC online at www.niacouncil.org.